Call the planning meeting for July 8th at 7 o'clock, and we'll go ahead and has everyone gone through the agenda and taken a look at what's on the agenda? We'll go ahead and approve it. So I'll make a motion. I'll make a motion to approve the agenda.
I'll second that motion. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Clea Apperson, aye.
Josie Mews, aye.
Cookie Shouse, aye.
Okay, and then we'll go ahead and make a motion to approve the May minutes for the Planning Commission.
I'll second that motion. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Haley Apperson, aye.
Josie Mews, aye.
Cookie Shouse, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Haley, I can't count your vote in the May meeting since you weren't there, but everybody else.
And then the June minutes also, has everyone gone through? Does anyone have any comments on the June minutes? So I'll make a motion that we approve the June minutes.
I'll second that motion. Matt Cochran, aye.
Josie Mews, aye.
Cookie Shouse, aye.
Thanks.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and go on. Lee is with us again tonight, and we're going to go through some legislative amendments that need to be made. There were legislative things done this year that we'll need to make some changes in our ordinances, and we have some information on that. And then we're going to have a discussion on our public hearing or the community meeting. And then Chapter 8 CUP conditional use revisions, and then the questions on the hearing. So Lee, you can go ahead and go.
Okay. Can everyone hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. So we have the necessity of making some changes to respond to things that the legislature did. And the last legislative session was really quite prolific in generating changes to local planning law. And we'll have to take this in pieces. And so I started with the piece that I think has the most practical and broadest impact on the town, which is to talk about the requirement that all communities have to allow internal accessory dwelling units as a use by right in their primarily residential zoning districts. And Boulder addressed the idea of external accessory dwelling units some time ago, back in 2018, but that ordinance does not address, or it doesn't cover what has to be covered to comply with state law. So basically, the requirement of state law is simple in principle, which is that you have to allow people to have an accessory dwelling unit within the footprint of a primary dwelling. And a primary dwelling is defined as a detached single family dwelling that is occupied by the owner. And so you would not be required to permit an accessory dwelling unit in a rental dwelling. Now, because tenure shifts back and forth and dwellings are sometimes occupied by the owner and sometimes rented, that's not really a clear-cut distinction, but it's a distinction that is made in the law now. So we will write it up and understand that enforcing it is not always going to be straightforward. The town is allowed to prohibit internal accessory dwelling units in a quarter of the area of its single family zoning districts, but I can't see at this moment how that's useful. We need a broader discussion, and we've talked about this in the past couple of meetings. We need a broader discussion of what that GM zoning district is. Is it a primarily residential zoning district? Is it a primarily agricultural zoning district? Do we need to change the way that the distinction is now made between the low density residential and the general zoning that covers really almost all of Boulder? And I think in principle was intended to be agricultural, but because it allows 5-acre lots, pretty much without exception, really isn't a primarily agricultural zoning district in the way it functions. These changes are pretty technical. I don't think we have to change anything in the general plan. I think the intent of the general plan is to provide housing for people, and we don't have to mess with that. Also, people are going to have the question, and it's a really fundamental question about if everyone can have an internal accessory dwelling unit, can that IAUDU be rented short term? And the answer is no. The state law, by definition, says that it has to be rented for 30 or more days. So the only way that you can use an IADU accessory as a short-term rental is within the terms of Boulder's existing ordinance on short-term rentals, okay? So nothing changes, at least apparently, there. Again, policing that is not always going to be straightforward, but there's a clear legal distinction, okay? So need to keep that in mind. The state law also allows the town to impose a few types of standards on the internal dwelling units. And I think, go back to the list of those after I make one more point, which is that the state law changes a whole bunch of provisions of the International Residential Code as it's enforced in Utah to facilitate internal accessory dwelling units. We don't have to, as a planning commission, mess with those amendments. For one thing, there's no choice. And for another thing, it will be amended into the International Residential Code, and eventually that will be adopted by Boulder by reference, just as the current building code is. So that's that. There's one important procedural thing before we go back to the standards as well, which is that you are allowed to record a notice with the county recorder whenever you get a permit or whenever you approve a permit for an accessory dwelling unit. And that notice is important because it's evidence that the owner understood that they could not rent it as a short-term rental. Okay. So that's critical that you, and I'll write up the enforcement language. I didn't think that was necessary for this meeting because there's a need to talk about the standards first. But it's really important that you enforce the notice thing if you want to be able to have some enforcement on short-term rentals. Okay, that's that reality. So to go back to the standards, we have the opportunity to prohibit internal accessory dwelling units in mobile homes. And I suspect that that makes sense. Mobile homes are not designed to be remodeled for that use. And when we say mobile homes, by Utah definition, we're talking about something that genuinely is a trailer on a chassis, not a modular home, okay? You are allowed to require a bedroom egress window, and that probably makes sense. That would ordinarily be a building code provision, but the legislature has changed that requirement of the building code. And it isn't absolutely necessary that you require an egress window from an internal accessory dwelling unit, but while it's not really a land use issue, it's a building issue, I think you should probably think about doing that. excuse me, you can prohibit accessory dwelling units, internal accessory dwelling units on parcels that are smaller than 6,000 square feet. And I don't know that that applies anywhere in Boulder. There aren't many homes on that small lot. But to the extent that it does, you could adopt that provision. You are allowed to prohibit an internal accessory dwelling unit that served by a failing septic tank. And while the definition of failing septic tank is perhaps potentially up in the air, I would certainly suggest that you do that. You can't require just a proof of capacity, unfortunately, okay? You have to show that that wastewater system is failing. The goal of this legislation was to make it pretty easy for people to have internal accessory dwelling units, and it does. There is a requirement that says, hey, you can't change the appearance of the dwelling, and that is so vague that I think we just ought to skip over it. What the law says by definition is that the internal accessory dwelling unit fits within the footprint of the dwelling as it stands. So they can't have an addition to the home for this purpose. It has to be within the dwelling as it sits on day one when the application is filed. Okay. So if I wanted to add on to my house for an internal accessory dwelling unit, I would have to get approval for the addition as part of the home first and go through the building code, expand the home, and then apply to have an internal accessory dwelling unit. That would be the process that would have to happen. Finally, and this is one that clearly is pretty straightforward, you're allowed to require one additional parking space for an internal accessory dwelling unit. And I would certainly suggest that you do that. I want to talk about your external accessory dwelling unit provisions that come from your old 2018 ordinance as well. But I think what we ought to do here is pause and go through that list of the standards that you can impose. And I think that's on the screen in front of you here. It's being shared. And so I think now would be a really good time to take comments and say, hey, are there any of these that you want to clarify? Are there any of these which you disagree with my conclusion about whether it makes sense to adopt it or not? And once we've had that discussion, I can bring back a draft that gets these standards in play.
I have a question, Lee.
Okay.
You said, so these IADUs, they're permitted, you said, or are you in talking about?
They're permitted by right, which means cannot ask for a conditional use permit. You have to the town simply has to issue a building permit if the proposed IADU meets the requirements.
Okay. So it's not even something that's going to come to the Planning Commission?
Nope. The only power that you have to affect the way this law works right now is to decide about the standards. Okay, the definition is set for you. The fact that it's by right is set for you. Really, the only thing you can control is the standards. And then the other power that you have that the law gives you is the power to record a notice that an IADU exists and cannot be used for short-term rental, which if you don't adopt that power, then you're contradicting your own current short-term rental ordinance. So I'm assuming that you will want that one in there, but we can talk about any of these pieces.
Okay, so are the standards up here?
Yeah, that's the standards that are listed, shared on the screen. Prohibit them in mobile homes, require an egress window, 6,000 square feet or less, prohibit in a dwelling served by a failing septic tank. Proving that the septic tank is failing is an issue, but probably not a bad requirement. I don't think you should mess with the part about the change in the appearance of the dwelling. That's way too vague. And then require one additional parking space when an IADU is issued a building permit. Any questions or thoughts about those potentials?
I don't really have any comments or questions. Do you, Josie?
No, I agree with all of his recommendations. I was just going to ask on the notice
So when the building permit is issued, then a notice specific to that building permit would be filed? Is that the process?
Yeah, the way the language will read is that the town clerk would record with the county recorder a notice. And that would be the town's proof, the town's evidence that the owner is aware and the property is subject to the restriction that it not be used as a short-term rental until they come in through your existing short-term rental ordinance, which they could do, right?
Yeah, they would
still be permitted to apply under that, but they can't just automatically say, oh, I have this accessory dwelling unit, I'm going to advertise it on Airbnb.
Right, that sounds good.
Yeah, I'm good with it. Thank you, Lee.
Sure. We don't have except a few choices, and I just wanted to get through the choices we do have here. And I will get you back a set of draft amendments. There's a set of draft amendments attached to the memo you got that deals with some of these. But I will go back and add the dwelling or the necessary language for the standards, and then that enforcement procedure will be added under your building permit language in the ordinance. Okay.
Yeah.
Are we clear?
Clear.
Okay, cool. So then, since we're talking about accessory dwelling units, I wanted to talk about external accessory dwelling units, which you permitted using a conditional use permit process in 2018, ordinance 2018-4. And that's going to have to be changed because it is not completely consistent with the new state law. But it also has in it what I consider to be a really difficult enforcement issue. And I would recommend eliminating that. The first part of that ordinance is definitions, which are superseded now by state law. And I have drafted amendments that are attached here that deal with that. There are some other things. There's an item which simply says the external accessory dwelling unit will not be a nuisance, and we're going to have to better define that. And then the parking that was required, I'm going to put in the parking table instead of leaving it there in the text so that all the parking requirements are in one place, right? So some of these changes are just, they aren't changes in what you asked for, they are changes in how it's organized. So that when you look at a CUP application for an external accessory dwelling unit, it'll just be easier to find things as you usually do. The table of uses will be amended, the parking table will be amended. Doesn't change anything that you did in 2018, it just makes it organized the same way as the rest of the ordinance. We need to deal with that sub-item F about nuisances, which I think we can do using nuisance language similar to what we adopted for home businesses. We have the big issue, which is the distinction that was made by the town at that time, which is now going on 4 years ago. It's a distinction between guest units and rental units. And it's an interesting distinction because you defined it in that old ordinance. Let me pull up. Do you have ordinance 2018-4 there where you can put it on the screen? If not, it's not a big deal. But the ordinance language in that old ordinance that kind of made me pause was this. It says the two uses, which would be the difference between a guest ADU and a rental ADU, the two uses can alternate depending upon circumstances and the needs of the owner in the same year or not, so long as all the terms and conditions of this ordinance are met. And the only way I can read that is that there's actually no distinction between the two. If the owner can simply say by his or her own choice, I'm switching type of unit, then the distinction that you've made is not enforceable. And so if somebody was there for the discussion of this in 2018 and remembers why that distinction was made, and the ordinance that was adopted then spends a fair amount of time on it, but if anyone can remember why that distinction was made, it would be good to talk about it. But given the language that's in there, it's just not enforceable.
Well, I think as I remember, I might be wrong, but as I remember, I think that we made the distinction between the two of them because one of them, as far as a guest, you wouldn't be making income on the property if you had a guest rental. You would if you had it the other way. And that was, does anybody else remember that? That's the distinction that I remember.
Yeah, something about like a mother-in-law cottage. So yeah, it's not actually used as a rental, but as Lee talks, I mean, is a distinction really necessary or not?
It had to do with
a short-term rental or it's not, right?
Right, but it had to do with income as far as having to report that income. If you have an ADU and you have a rental, you're getting income on it. If it went under a guest, generally you would have, like with me, I would have somebody downstairs that was maybe taking care of me or something as a guest, and I wouldn't be charging somebody. That's my recollection.
And I understand that, but the response to that is that you don't have the authority or the power to regulate whether it generates income or not.
Yeah.
That's not a zoning distinction. And obviously you anticipated that issue with the language you wrote saying the two uses can alternate. If I have a unit that is occupied by a relative and that relative, say it's a kid who's living with me while they're looking for a job and they find a job and move, you know, wherever it is their job is, and then you decide to rent it, it's still the same physical object, right?
Yep.
And to the extent that we stick to the physical, now, you know, we regulate the term of rentals. We have to deal with tenure issues in zoning to some degree, but everything is easier to understand and easier to enforce if we stick to what's physical, right? And so I don't see how you would ever enforce this because it says the circumstances and the needs of the owner. So if the owner can define his or her needs, then from an enforcement point of view, there's no difference.
Well, I think that you can tell that we crafted this before we did it. We started working with you.
Yeah. So I just wanted to be clear, you know, and if the distinction in your minds, as you have explained it, and it's certainly a distinction that is understandable, is between whether it generates income and not, then what I'm telling you is that, A, you don't really have the power to regulate on that basis, except in very narrow ways. You can regulate short-term rentals, although there's some limitations in Utah law on how you do that. But there isn't any place where you get the power to say, hey, this unit has to be rented by definition, right?
Yeah.
Which is what this is essentially saying. And so I would prefer, vastly prefer, to simply take this out and say that external accessory units are subject to the standards in here that are useful, which is the size limit, right? That's probably the most important standard that you set, is that they can't be more than so large, depending upon which zoning district they are in. You said that in the HDR, they have to be attached, and I don't have any objection to that particularly, although I'm curious about why, although the definition of attachment is a fairly loose one. And so, you know, we can keep all the standards that really regulate the impact external accessory dwelling units would have on the town without maintaining that rental and guest distinction. And I would I would suggest that it's easier that way in the long run. And the only other comment I would make is that if it's a goal to encourage these types of units to provide more housing that might, at least in theory, be more affordable, then the question is, do you want to require a CUP for them, or would you have them be uses by right, just like the internal ADUs have to be? And that's a conversation that we could have. But the standards would end up looking the same as for the internal accessory dwelling units. In other words, you would still require extra parking for an external accessory dwelling unit, right? You would still say that you can't create one if the septic tank is not working. And in this case, you could actually require, since it's not an internal unit, you could require the owner to prove that they had capacity in their wastewater system for the external ADU. And I think that would be a good thing to require, right? Then you have those size and proximity limits that really, in some ways, are the core of what you wanted to do with regulating these things, is to make sure they're not so big and to make sure that they are clearly, you know, as the law says, subordinate to the primary dwelling. So are there any questions or thoughts there?
So on the wastewater, we had discussed having, you know, proof of capacity. And for some, I don't remember the reason, but we were guided into using that language that new construction must meet all applicable health, fire, and building codes, including culinary water source and wastewater facilities, instead of going into, I like the, like what you said, is if, you know, they'd have to provide the proof of the capacity, then it would have to be inspected, which right. I think is a good idea. I lean away from having a CUP. We wanted the CUP for this just under the rentals anyway. And if there's no distinction, then I think this should just, you know, these standards would be followed under the building permit process. So right. I don't see the use, the need for the CUP, but that's my opinion. That's all I think I've got.
What other people think about the CUP for the external accessory units?
This is Cookie Schaus. I agree with Josie about, I think a CUP would not be necessary. I think we can do it the other way.
Okay. Is there any objection to that?
No. So it goes into the hands of basically the town clerk at that point, right? If it's
it's in the hands of the zoning administrator at that point.
Okay.
So right. That would be the same as any other building permit. If I just come in to build a single family dwelling without any accessory, anything, then I get a permit from the zoning administrator.
Right.
And this then would be precisely the same process as is followed for that.
Okay. So it basically becomes a legislative issue and not, it takes a burden off the PC, to be honest.
That's right. The PC does not have to look at these. And truly, if I come in and say, hey, I want to build a casita in my backyard on a large lot where the septic tank is adequate, are you going to say no?
Right.
I don't think so. And I think it is, I think it's great for family use in terms of, you know, we call them mother-in-law apartments a lot, and that's right. That works. I'm going to suspect that the majority of them are probably occupied by unemployed kids rather than mother-in-laws, but one way or the other, they work for families. And then if I have such a unit and want to rent it for 30 or more days, right? The time limitation is still applicable to these, as you said it in 2018, and consistent with the new state law. These could not be used as short-term rentals unless they went through your other rental, short-term rental process. You know, if I'm going to rent that for 30 or more days, perhaps I can afford to rent it to somebody who is working in Boulder for a price that they can more or less afford. And that would thereby help with the workforce housing question. It's impossible to know how much it would help. But, you know, these casitas tends to be what people call them in the Southwest. But these external accessory dwellings are becoming increasingly popular for people as a source of income. And it's a way to hopefully provide some more affordable housing that doesn't, you know, require apartment structures, that doesn't require changing the density of things very much. The size limitations that you have put on them in the 2018 ordinance seem perfectly reasonable to me.
Great, thank you. Yeah, no, I don't have any objections.
Anything else about accessory dwelling units while we're on the topic? If not, then what I will do is I'll take what I sent you, and you obviously are welcome to read what I sent out this time, see the changes in the use table, the change in the parking table, and the other language that I drafted there. I included definitions and something about the standards. I didn't put the enforcement procedure in yet, but I will do that now that people understand what it would look like. And I'll get you back another version of this memorandum that answers all the questions. And then you could talk about that. And there are other requirements that the legislature created this last session, quite a few of which apply to subdivisions that we're going to have to look at and see how that matches your existing subdivision regulations. And I haven't taken that step yet, but I will do that and communicate it to you. Now that I have direction on this, I can finish this up and move on to the next part of the puzzle.
Does the state ever give us less work?
No, that's just not going to happen. The nature of the process. And I think that we just have to live that reality. The truth is, I think that there are probably internal accessory dwelling units that exist in Boulder right now. I've never worked in a community that they didn't exist. And they may be rented, they may be used for relatives or as guest quarters. They're not advertised for rent. So they're a reality that's out there. And this gives you some ability to regulate any impacts they might have. That ability is limited by the state legislation, but I think you can, as long as you have the ability, in my opinion, the single most important thing is the ability to say, no, these cannot be used for short-term rental, except within the terms of our short-term rental regulations, right? That's the most important single part of what you've got here. And by writing the ordinance the way that I have proposed, we can make that absolutely crystal clear.
That'd be great.
You're going to be adding these definitions to them, right?
There's definitions, some of which come from state law, some of which are necessary to support that. So you've got an appendix on this memo that I sent out. And that appendix covers a repeal of the old ordinance so that everything's consistent. It amends the use table for accessory dwellings, right? That's a necessary part of what we're doing here. It amends the parking table for accessory dwellings, again, a necessary part. It adds, and I think this is a good addition to the CUP procedure, proof of ownership, which is part of the state standards. It repeals a section in its entirety and replaces it in Chapter 10. And that speaks to the accessory dwelling units one of the important provisions there is you can only have one ADU on your parcel. It can either be internal or external, but you can only have one. Okay. So that strictly limits the increase in density or intensity of use. Are there limits on occupancy? Yeah, they have to be 30 days or more. If they want to be converted to a short-term rental, you got to go through the process. Is there a maximum size? And I pulled the maximum sizes out of the old ordinance into the new language. No change in what's required there. The internal units have to fit within the footprint, as I explained. EADUs have to be within 100 feet of the primary dwelling. We could talk about that 100 feet, but okay, fine. Wastewater system is dealt with there. And then I am in the definitions. I wanted to clarify the meaning of the term accessory building. There's kind of a hitch in your ordinance there. If I were a rancher who wanted a new accessory building on my parcel, or let's say I was a guest ranch that wanted a new accessory building on my parcel, I might need it to be bigger than 1,000 square feet. And in the old ordinance, and the ordinance, the way it's written right now, actually, any accessory building, doesn't matter used for what, any accessory building is limited to 1,000 square feet. They're also limited to not have a kitchen. And I immediately thought of our discussion of guest ranches. If you were to put in dining / recreation hall with a kitchen in it on a guest ranch, it's actually prohibited to do that the way the ordinance is written right now. And I don't see that as a reasonable prohibition. Accessory dwellings, commercial, I define so it's clear that there's a distinction between an accessory to a commercial use and accessories to residential uses. Clarified external and internal. Here, the internal definition is straight out of state law. I tried to make the definition of accessory use simpler and hopefully thus more useful. I also found the definition of mobile home that's in the current ordinance isn't consistent with state law. So I pulled the definition out of state law and put it in there. And then in order to enforce or in order to use the new state law on accessory dwellings, you have to have a definition of primary dwellings. So we got to add that. And then just so it's clear in the definitions under single family dwelling, I followed state law in saying that they may be included by definition. So that's what you've got so far. What will be added is the enforcement procedure and recording that notice. And I will get that out to you in time for you to look at it in August.
Great, thank you.
Sure.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Well, there's more to come. There's, as I said, there's some stuff we have to do about the subdivision ordinance. And I will, once I've got this finished up, which I can easily do now, I will plow through what the legislature changed about subdivisions.
Because we're going to work on that anyway. All right. Thank you, Lee.
Sure.
Okay.
So and you guys have a public hearing on the campground regulations, right?
Right.
Okay. I will opt out unless you have a question about those regulations before you go to hearing, but
I think
okay. Okay.
Glad you offered. I was gonna try to
we have plenty of time before the hearing is scheduled. So please let me find my copy here and we'll go forward. Okay.
Okay. And Peggy can scroll down to the very end of the document. It's 22B10.
22B10. Okay.
We didn't discuss RV condominium. I'm not clear on what that is.
Okay.
Or
well,
if you want it.
The reality is that, and I first ran into this a long time ago, I was working in the Ozarks of all places. That's where I first encountered this, but here and there, around the country, you will find a place where instead of renting a campground space short term, a campground has been subdivided into individual parcels, which is to say that and of course those parcels would not fit minimum lot sizes or anything else under almost any type of zoning. But developers use the condominium rules in state law to do them as condominiums. And that takes them around the zoning regulations because they're creating a condominium. And I just wanted it to be clear that you can't do that or anticipate doing that when you create a campground unless you are going to do it in compliance with the town subdivision rules.
And we have no language in our subdivision about condominiums.
No, but we probably are going to have to discuss that because there's essentially a state requirement that you do. We're going to get there. At this point in time, I was trying to be as comprehensive as I could. And that's a possibility that really does exist out there in the world. And a lot of them are timeshared, so they're even more complicated than a normal condominium. So that you would buy this RV space in the Ozarks for 30 days, right? And it's your property for 30 days, like a timeshare condo in a building would be. And I just didn't want us to have that happen because it would complicate the enforcement of these campground rules tremendously, if not make it almost impossible. So I just wanted to prohibit that. And when we get to the subdivision regulations, we can talk about the other shoe that has to drop there.
Okay. So it just brings forth another question is sure. to me, the way that reads is not prohibiting it. It's making it possible. If right. we have to have something there in the subdivision ordinance that allows condominiums, wouldn't that open us up here that this RV condominium would be?
I don't understand the law to say that we have to be open to RV condominiums. You do have to be open to some types of condominium ownership. And I need to clarify that in my own thinking before I go too deep with you here. I'm relatively certain that you can regulate the size, shape, and appearance of a condominium.
So okay. Would it not be better to instead of saying it may be possible to create an RV condominium, just simply saying RV condominiums are not allowed?
We can do that. And since this is the hearing draft, the way it's written, when you guys have the hearing here in a few minutes, if you want to make that change, then after the public portion of the hearing, you ought to make a motion to make that change.
Okay.
Okay.
That answers that. Thank you, Lee.
Sure. Anything else about the campgrounds? I think we've got it down to the minimum that we need and with reasonable restrictions and limitations that would still allow a person to develop a workable, viable campground. But obviously you may hear some things at the public hearing that people have to say. And rather than me staying on the public hearing that is actually quite late for me where I am, I will let you guys tell me what you want to change, including the change that was just discussed. Now you can make a motion on that and say, okay, before we send this on to the council, change that section. Any other questions?
I have a question.
Okay.
So Lee, in this document, ordinance 2021-5, down at the bottom, it says amend chapter 6 of the Boulder zoning ordinance. Mm-hmm. You're talking about the zoning ordinance before we codified it. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's that's the form that I have it in right now. And I guess I'm going to have to change the language of these things over to reflect the codification. But I wasn't even sure that the codification was complete at the time I wrote this. So in order to be clear, I referred it back to the old ordinance so that we all know what we're talking about. And I guess I need to as we move into the future, I'll have to start working with the codified version. But, you know, as long as there's clarity here about what's being changed, we're fine. And whatever gets done here can be added into the codified version by your service that does that for you. And that'll be the same with what we're talking about on ADUs. What I've done so far is just refer to the old ordinances, because that was the way I could be clear, given what I was working with at the moment.
Okay. I just figured that out recently. So.
Right. Yeah, I know it's something that we've got to move into, and I guess I need to find the link to the codification of the ordinances and go forward. I assume that's up on the web now, the codified form?
They both are.
Okay.
Isn't that correct, Peg? Michelle?
I'm going to let Peg answer.
Isn't that correct, Peg?
I'm not positive the codified link is there. I know a draft link is, but... Shaylin, I need to make sure it is.
So right. When we talk about these, right now they're interchangeable because we voted on the codification of it, right?
Yes, that's, yes.
Okay.
What was so voted on, I think, in the town hall in March, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. So these are interchangeable right now because we are in the middle of changing this. I'm just trying to clarify for my own point.
What exists in the codified version, which was based off of the original zoning ordinances,
right.
And it included whatever had been done like in January and February, I believe.
Right.
Those things are part of the codified version. Everything you've been working on since then, since the town council approved the codified version in March, I think I have the date right, Michelle, right?
I think so.
Everything since then are these kind of outstanding, yet to be codified versions of amended ordinances. And I would not claim that we have a real clear way of identifying that on the website right now, and we need to do that.
Well, I think the thing that I'm wondering is that these are interfacing or interchangeable so that they're both the same because we're still working on them together. Do you understand what I'm saying in a way? Because Lee is using amend chapter 6 and amend chapter 10, but that's not what the codified one says. So because we went for it, they are we're still working with both of them.
As what Lee said is, kind of what has to be right now. He's referring to chapters as they existed in the old zoning ordinance. Just to be clear that everyone has access to that, the same, some sort of a standard. So yeah, we're kind of in between things where he's able to clearly reference the codified version and everyone has that and knows exactly what it is.
I mean, right now, as far as, unless someone changed it very, very recently, you can go to the town's website and find ordinance 2020. Well, find what one were we working on, the 2018-4. You can go to the website and find that. It's there. And so you know exactly what it is I'm proposing to change.
Yeah. I just wanted to clarify that.
Well, it's got to be a work in progress. And eventually we're going to have to start working within the framework of what's been codified. But right now, I don't think we can do that and have the clarity we need about what's being changed.
I agree. I think the speed that you guys are making amendments to various ordinances, there's no way to keep the codification up to date with all that. At some point, I'm hoping the dust settles for a few months and we can catch up with that. But I think what we need to have is the link to the codified version, the old ordinances, which will be clearly identified as, you know, them, and then possibly a new page that is the catch-all page for these. For example, this ordinance, if you were to pass it tonight, well, I should say that whatever the town council approves, as a new ordinance, there should be a catch-all page for those as well, kind of pre-codification.
Well, and generally speaking, the town council will adopt an ordinance with all the whereases and the signature page and all the things that are required to make an ordinance official. And then that will be sent to the codifiers and they'll put it in where it belongs. I think that's the service that you pay for. And so even if we switch to where we're talking about a new set of chapter numbers and section numbers in the codified version, even if we start changing the way we refer to things, you're still going to see ordinances that look like this.
Yeah.
That have the whereas as to why you are doing this change in the town's ordinances, that have the signature page that's required and all of that. And then the codifiers extract the actual legal language from the ordinance and put it into the codified version where it belongs.
Okay. Right. I just needed to clarify that for myself. Thank you.
Sure. Is there anything else before I leave you?
Anyone else have any questions?
I don't.
I have a question for Lee.
Yes.
This may be an unfair question, but do you recall right off the top of your head, Lee, what major things in the original RV park ordinance you deleted or
I have
any major changes?
Well, I guess you'd have to define major before we answered that with complete clarity, but it's shown in this ordinance in terms of, if you look at the proposed ordinance of 2021-5 that I sent you, it shows what's changed. Everything that's added is underlined. Everything that's deleted is either deleted in its entirety, but with a reference. So for instance, it says amend chapter 10 of the Boulder zoning ordinance as follows, delete section 1016 in its entirety. And of course that makes it hard to decide what's major and what's minor, which goes to your question, but it gets us into a better organization. And I think the change we made, and this is based on my recollection without being able to just quickly look it up, the change we made was that we clarified the size and density of campgrounds, right? Which was not clear in the firmer version. And from the point of view of a person, from a point of view of a property owner, you know, a member of the public, looking at this, all the rest is details. You have to decide if you're willing or if you want to develop a campground within or a guest ranch, because this obviously also affects guest ranches. In the change, you have to decide if you want to develop within the framework that's set here. You know, we replaced the setbacks from table 2 for campgrounds. The setbacks are larger for campgrounds. The number of units is now clear. The number of campsites that may be developed per acre is now clear. We really simplified the access things. There was some redundancy in there. We clarified about solid waste. But for the most part, we went right along with what's there. Oh, and the other big thing that is now clear that was not clear before is the need for an on-site host or attendant.
Yeah.
That was actually the biggest single item we spent in our discussion, right?
Yeah.
And so from the point of view of someone who wants to develop, that was not clear before in the way that it's clear now. And so, you know, this goes pretty much right along with what was said, but it adds some detail in places like about solid waste disposal. It's the same rule for occupancy of a campground as was in the old ordinance. It adds a maintenance clause, just like we did for other CUPs. It adds that language we talked about earlier about you can't have an RV condominium. That was not in there at all before. because I'm sure that no one but me thinks about such esoteric possibilities. But it's basically the same set of standards with clarity, and then adding much more explicit standards about setbacks and density of campgrounds. That's as good a summary as I can give you off the top of my head of how it changed.
Great summary. Thank you.
Oh.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah. Well, if that is all, appreciate the esoteric. Yeah, you have to sometimes. The experience of working all over the place helps one see possibilities that in Boulder may never happen, but perhaps you need to be ready for just in case they do. So I will wish you guys a happy public hearing, and let me know if you make any changes other than the amendment that we just talked about, which I assume you probably will make about the condominium language there at the end. Once I hear from Peg or Michaela about any other changes, I will put it into final form so it can be sent to the council. And I'll work up the accessory dwelling units language based on the conversation we've had here for you to take another look at in August, and then that could go to hearing after August. Hopefully I'm doing some travel with my kids in July. So I may not have the changes in the subdivision regulations to you by early August. That may have to come in September.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Alrighty. Thank you guys.
Happy travels.
No, thank you. I'm sure they will be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So before we go into the public hearing, we're going to open it up for anyone that has any questions. Once we go into the public hearing, we will take statements. So before we open the public hearing, does anyone have any questions on the RV and campground and guest ranch ordinance?
I don't know if I how to raise my hand, but I have three questions, but I didn't know if I should wait and save them for the public part or ask them now.
We'd like to have you ask your questions now before we have the public hearing. And then when we have the public hearing, if you have any comments, what we're trying to do is ask the questions now so that people can have their questions asked about it.
Okay. I didn't understand on the guest ranch when it said food services. Are you just saying that's a possibility? What does it mean? I mean, does having a stove in the house qualify it, fridge, et cetera, as a food service because they can cook? Or are you talking about catering or something like that?
I assume that we were talking about food services at the guest ranch. We never talked about any kind of catering or offsite or anything like that.
Well, how do you define food service? And are you requiring it or saying it could happen?
It's A guest ranch includes, it includes it.
And what is it?
It says a guest ranch includes overnight guest lodging units, recreational activities that are on site or originate on site, and food services. So I'm not sure what you're asking.
What I'm asking is, what does a food service mean to this? What is this saying? I asked if having a place for people to cook their own food is a food service, or are you saying that a guest ranch has to have a restaurant?
I'm saying, I am assuming that they are providing food services. I'm not saying that the guests themselves can have food services.
So you're not defining food service then?
We're not, it's not defined right now.
Okay, thank you. My next question was why cabins cannot have sanitary or cooking inside of them. Why can't that be an option?
So the thing on that too also is that we're using the septic and the systems that are in place for the campground. The cabins are just cabins to stay in.
Yes, but a lot of cabins have a microwave or a little mini fridge. Some have bathrooms. So are you saying they can't have a microwave or any electricity? Or I don't understand it. Why you would limit that and wouldn't allow the campground owner to make that decision, as long as anything septic wise was obviously legal.
I don't know that we discussed that any farther. Does anyone have any other comments on that question? So I don't know that I have an answer for that question.
Well, I'll take a stab at it. I think a lot of times a kitchen would be defined of having a sink. Maybe it would be called a kitchenette, something like that. But just a coffee pot, a plug-in coffee pot, is pretty standard for just a room, which is more what these cabins were envisioned to be. I don't know, as far as a little fridge or something like that. But a lot of times a kitchen accessory area in a larger cabin would have pots and pans and just a few utensils or whatever, whereas these cabins would just be for like an overnight thing or whatever, and just have a coffee pot and maybe a fridge. That's what we had in mind. We didn't have in mind a full-on kitchen for the guests to cook for themselves. Does that help, Donna?
Sort of. I'm just sort of wondering why that wouldn't be okay if an owner wanted to have that in some of their units or not. And to say coffee pot, they don't have water. So what, are they going to walk outside and go get water and go? I have seen places like out in the Navajo Res where they'll give you a pitcher of water in your, they don't have running water. So it just depends. There's all kinds of cabins out there for rent. And I just didn't know what the reasoning behind limiting it. That was my question. So my next question is concerning why only 10 rooms on 55 acres for a guest ranch, yet you allow 20 RVs to park in 2 acres. 10 rooms on 55 acres for a guest ranch seems very limited in my mind. And so that's my comment. Sorry. I just wanted to know why we were so limited on guest ranch and so liberal comparatively to campgrounds.
Take a stab at that one. guest ranch is not required to be in a commercial zone, and campgrounds are. The guest ranch intent is to, you know, supplement a farm income, and, you know, and therefore not being commercial. I mean, the impact of going larger in an ag zone would put it into the commercial realm. So that's why.
Well, it depends on how, if it's one unit with five bedrooms or one unit with one bedroom. And so now somebody might want 10 units all with one bedroom. That's definitely more of an impact than three units with five bedrooms. Does that make sense? Upper levels, lower levels. So anyway, I just thought that it was kind of limiting, but that's another comment. I'm done. I'm done. Thank you for trying to answer my questions.
Thank you, Donna.
Do you want to go into public hearing now?
Yeah, as long as there's no other, I'm just kind of waiting for you. There's no one else.
There's no hands raised electronically.
What?
There's no hands raised electronically. I've got this list open because it takes them right to the top when they do it.
All right, so we'll go ahead and close for any kind of questions, and we'll go ahead and open the public hearing. I'll make a motion to open the public hearing.
I'll second that motion. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Josie Mews, aye.
Cookie Schaus, aye.
Haley, are you there?
Guys, it just went out on me, and I just got back in. Sorry. It didn't go, like, I didn't get all the way kicked off, but it just was like, dip, 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 dip. And then anyways, it kind of did the scrolling waiting. And so I heard nothing you said in the last, like, 2 minutes, maybe.
So we just opened up the public hearing, and we have a motion to open the public hearing in a second. We just need for you to vote.
Okay. Yes. Haley Apperson, aye.
Okay. And Pauline Thompson, aye. So the public hearing is now open for anyone that has a public comment on the RV park and campground and guest ranch. If anyone has any comments.
I'm raising my hand.
Hi, Judy.
Hi. Hey, listen, I think it probably would be a good idea to define food services. That would put an end to exactly what a food service is. And for future reference, it'd probably be a good idea. That's my comment.
Okay, thank you, Judy. Okay, so I'm just waiting for somebody to, Peg, is there anyone else with their hands raised?
My screen is limited in being able to show anything. So, Michelle, I don't see raised hands, but if someone has a comment, would you just sort of blurt it out? Because
yeah, no electronic.
Blurt out your name at least.
Go for it.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and close.
Oh, wait, I just thought someone was going to. So I'll go ahead and be the lonely one speaking again. I personally think the limitation on 10 rooms at guest ranch could be limiting. I also think that saying cabins can't have any kitchens unless you define that and say, well, coffee pots are okay. I mean, I just don't know why you even put that in there. And so maybe want to refine that. Food services too, I agree that needs to be done. And yeah, that was my comment. Thank you.
Could Could you say your name up for the record, Donna?
Yes, it's Donna Owen. Is that good? Okay, thank you.
For the recording.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing.
Let me, hold on. Let me just make sure one more time. Okay. There's no other.
Just let me know.
Okay. Okay. Anybody else, please say your name and just state a comment. I'll give it 10 more seconds. Oh, or whatever. Okay, I'm thinking nobody else has a comment. Okay.
Okay, so I'll make motion to close the public hearing.
I'll second that motion. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Haley Apperson, aye.
Cookie Schaus, aye.
Josie, I think you said aye, right?
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did we lose Josie?
Yeah, I. Yeah. Josie Music. Oh,
okay. Okay, so does anyone on the Planning Commission have any comments?
I think food service could be defined as, you know, meals can be provided or meals would be provided. Typically, if you think of a guest ranch, the folks do eat on site. It's not a restaurant because that would imply something open to the public and a commercial use. But, you know, I envision breakfast is served. There's something available, you know. I don't know if we should say it may be provided or it would be provided. That's, you know, that's up for discussion. But I definitely think it should not define a restaurant.
I feel the same way. I'm not really sure how else to define it. I feel like if we pinpoint it, if we get more defined, Does anyone else have a comment on food services?
I have two comments. I think the parameters, I agree with Josie, as long as maybe we can get Lee to define it since he's the definer, but to make sure that it's not issued as a restaurant that's for public use, but you have the option of having food services on site for your guests at the guest ranch. And the second thing I want to hit on is to, and we'll, I guess we could make a motion on that, but is to make sure we amend that condominium thing that was, that Josie noted.
Yeah.
Okay. So then I'm gonna make a motion to accept ordinance 2021-5 with the
Proposed changes.
With the proposed changes that we figure out a better way of explaining food services that are not restaurants or commercial operations for the public, that Lee will help us with that proposal, and that we make sure that there is no RV condominiums that will be created in this ordinance.
I'll second that motion. All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Josie Mews, aye.
Cookie Schaus, aye.
Haley Apperson, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye. Okay. Okay, Peg, so we'll go ahead and move on to Ray Gardner. And so what we're doing tonight is just a concept discussion with Ray Gardner. He is looking into having an RV park. And we'll go ahead and let him show us what he has, and then we'll talk about it. if anybody has any questions. This is just a concept. And Ray, are we going to be able to pick him up?
If you want to come closer, this is the microphone.
Okay, so I just need
to sit right over here. It's fine. Yeah.
So
can we see Ray? Is Ray?
Do you want me to?
They don't need to see me.
Okay, we don't need to see. Okay, so Ray is sitting right here with us, and he's just going to start talking now. So he's just right here.
Okay. Well, thank you. Good evening. So I think my hope was this first picture would be pretty self-explanatory. For those who may still be wondering where this is located, this is a couple of miles north of, that's about a mile north of the cemetery on the west side of Highway 12, just off Highway 12, at the bottom end of private property, Gardner Ranch private property. Maybe next picture.
Can you go to the next one?
I thought I had both of them up, and I had double the same one, so I'm looking here.
Okay.
Sorry. If you want to keep talking.
Okay. So, while she's looking up, this site would sit on Gardner Ranch property on that side of the road. It's about 170, 180 acres. My hope would be that I could develop a small portion of it on the south end. It is not very visible from the highway. In fact, on the site, the proposed site, there are no visible homes. The closest home would probably be mine to the north. In my mind, a development such as this would allow, hopefully economically, the rest of the property to remain ag open space. That would be my hope with this. And any luck with that other picture there?
I'm getting there. Keep talking. Okay. Keep talking.
Okay. I found it.
Does anyone have any questions right now?
Ray, this is Cookie. I'm wondering if you could, is it near your corrals? Is that the area?
Not really. It's south of the corral, probably half a mile.
Okay. Got it.
Right off Highway 12.
Right.
This area would This area would take in approximately 3 acres. I kind of sketched in a possible traffic pattern. I think a basic loop design is the most efficient use of your space. For an RV park, you need a couple of things. You need plenty of space, and you need it to be relatively flat. That can be kind of hard to find in Boulder. But this area has not been in really in production for some time, mainly because it's at the end of the ditch, and we've been low on water for some time, and it really is not contributing to the ag production. Like I mentioned, this traffic pattern, I would probably do something different, but the main concept is the same. That is, I'm looking at this area that's shown on the picture there, and would probably still want to do some kind of a loop traffic pattern, as that would seem to be the most efficient use of space. and the easiest to maneuver an RV.
So you have in the corner up there five backup spaces, 15 pull throughs. So I went through and counted these. Your backups are there on the ends, right?
Correct.
And then your 15 pull-ups are the docks.
So each dock represents a hookup. Whether it's a backup or a pull-through, each dock represents a hookup. And then, again, it's just hand-drawn in. This is really, I think, what would drive part of this design would be the septic engineer, because there is some slope. Everything slopes to the south. And so there may need to be some adjustment based on his ability to design the septic.
So Ray, Matt Cochran here. Are you planning to have sort of a full hookup with electricity and septic for that setup?
Correct. If you notice down through the middle of that portion there, that dotted line, that is where the power line goes. And right next to it is the water line. Now, I wish it was someplace else, but it is where it is. But I think we can work around it. It would not be my intent to ever park anybody underneath the power line. And we would, of course, have to observe the right of way from the power line and the water line, which runs next to it.
Thank you.
This is Cookie again. I'm wondering about, do you have to go across the Dixie National Forest area to get to Highway 12, or is that your land?
Yes, we would. There is about 200 or 210 feet between the state right-of-way and private land. Mm-hmm. We have for many years maintained an easement across that. We pay an annual fee to maintain that easement. I spoke with the Forest Service and spoke with Terry Glay, kind of explained to him what I was looking into and thinking of doing. And he didn't see, as long as I didn't do any excavation, he thought that I could improve that right away with gravel, and that wouldn't be an issue.
Thank you.
Does anyone else have any questions? Any comments?
So maybe to further explain, this picture isn't quite complete in that I do not have a road sketched in that would provide closer access to some possible tent sites. So it is lacking that. One thing to note, there is this row of trees along the stream between the highway. This area would not be very visible from the highway. And like I said, this area you cannot see because you're surrounded by the forest on three sides. Really the only unobstructed view you have other than trees and hillsides is kind of northwest. You kind of have a view of Warren Point and part of Boulder Mountain. I think it's a nice spot. I think it provides a place in Boulder for people to have a septic and a bathroom and a trash can. And in my opinion, I would rather see somebody in a campground rather than parked off the road, all over the road, on Boulder Mountain and down Burke Trail and wherever. I think this is just something that's needed in the community. And I think this would be a spot that would be out of most people's way. But I'm happy to hear your thoughts and comments. And this is kind of a design in progress. If you have some thoughts that you think would make this maybe a little more doable or efficient in terms of traffic flow and placement, the hookups, then sure.
Hey, Ray. Steve has a question for you. Go ahead, Steve. I think.
Hi, Ray. How far from the creek is that shower, laundry, restroom?
So, again, as it's drawn, it's probably a couple of hundred feet. But again, you know, a lot of that is kind of in flux, depending on how the septic engineer would want to situate everything to make it work a little better for his design.
Okay, thank you.
So we could actually sit on the other side if that's what he wanted. I mean, that's, you know, it could actually move over onto the other side if it needed to be farther away from that strip.
Yes,
you see what
sure.
I'm saying? Easy, because there's lots of room over there.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Does anyone else have any questions? Comment?
I had a question.
Okay.
I think I may have missed, I was taking notes, I might have missed what Ray was talking about, but when he and I were chatting, he did make mention of what you guys were interested in, which was providing a unit that may be the manager / employee housing. Do you want to talk to that, Ray, or am I premature?
No, that's fine. It would be my intent to provide some kind of apartment / office for a employee manager. And that would probably be a separate structure from what's shown here. I guess keep in mind that to do that, you're incurring, you know, a fair expense to provide a different structure housing, to provide housing for your employee for what would probably be 6 months of the year. And so I think that would be a consideration in limiting how many hookups and how many tent sites, for the reasoning that if you're obligated to provide an apartment and office, a permanent structure, then that adds quite a bit to your investment, and you would really, from a business standpoint, you need enough sites to be able to recoup your money on that kind of an investment.
Okay, so I have a comment on that. Basically, because you're in the middle of us changing our ordinances right now, as you heard today. And in our appendix 22B, I don't know if you saw this, but it says, is there a limit of the number of units that may be in the campground? 20, including RV sites, tents, and cabins. One unit reserved for the use of the owner or an employee does not count toward the 20.
Okay.
So that's an option that you'll have.
Okay.
So that's my only comment on that.
So somebody staying in an RV can serve as the employer to take care of the vessel.
And that's once this goes before the council next weekend is accepted.
Okay.
That's an option. Michelle?
Yeah, we have an in-person public comment.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't even. So go ahead.
Ray, my name is Jay Kelly. The question I had is, people in RV facilities will be LP gas refills. So do you intend to have LP gas stored on site?
No.
Can everybody hear that?
No, we couldn't hear
that. No.
Okay, so Mr. Scott?
Kelly.
Mr. Kelly just asked Ray if there would be any
LP gas
storage on site. And Ray said no.
No, I would leave that up to the local gas stations to provide that as they currently are doing.
Okay. We have another question, Judah.
Speaking, Ray, what would be your culinary water supply?
So the culinary water supply, I spoke with Connie
with Older Farms did, and she said, yeah, we have commercial hookups available, and so that would be my intent, would be to purchase a commercial hookup and tie into the system.
Another question from Mr. Kelly.
Again, I'm not familiar with the current ordinance, but is there a restriction on the length of stay for people in an RV park?
No, I don't think so. I think, let's see, is there a limit on duration of, this is what we're putting in. This is what's going to be confusing to me. So are we looking at what, you know, if Ray goes under what we're proposing right now, it's, oh, I just found it right here. Where did I just see that? Yes, there is a limit. Where is it? Can anyone find that? The limit? Where did I see it?
I couldn't hear the question.
The question was, is there a limit on the duration of stay? And we think there is one written in the new ordinance, but Colleen's trying to identify it.
In the new ordinance, it says, yes, occupants shall be limited to no more than 180 days in any 365-day period. A single campground host may be exempt from that, from this limit.
You're asking six months,
right? Right. And so, the reason why we did this was because this campground could also provide housing for people here in town.
Seasonal employees.
Employment too. That would give Ray an opportunity to house people that for employment.
I understand that, but would you restrict the number of sites that could occupy that have a home? My concern is that if the whole place fills up, everybody said for 6 months, then it's not really a, it's not really a tourist vacation destination per se, if it comes local housing.
Okay, so Mr. Todd has just commented on the fact that if Mr.
Kelly.
I'm sorry. So anyway, our question is 185 days too long, and will people try to stay there for that whole time?
And will the whole thing fill up with only seasonal employees? Will there actually be any space left for tourists?
Yeah, 180 days more than valid for, you know, whatever, pick a number.
Right.
20% of the spot. Certainly the host spot should be good for the whole year.
Yeah. Right?
That spot that's dedicated to the
not in your ordinance.
And
no one thought it. Hold on, sorry.
Okay, so does anyone have any comments on that?
Yes, I have a comment. I know what Ray will need to make money, and his daily rate will probably factor people out who want to live here more than 2 or 3 days or a week at a time, unless he just wants to do it because he's a good guy. Seriously, you cannot look at this as feasible for housing. You'll have to put in a mobile home park if you want to do that. And you have not allowed those because $35 a night is probably going to be, or more, 50, depending on the size, whatever Ray wants, is the going rate, is probably going to be prohibitive to most people who are working in the local businesses. Just my comment.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'd like to reframe here. First off, I just want to, just for business sake here, you know, this conceptual plan, I thought this was a conversation between the PC and the person who's presenting it. Can we maybe wait for public opinion later, Colleen, or something? So sure. We can get our, because it's getting a little confusing here and I want to stay on track. My comments that I want to say beyond that to Ray is that right now this ordinance is not passed yet. So I don't have all the, obviously this one has more conditions, the one that is not passed yet. And we don't know if it's going to be passed, but what I see personally from the design that you have in process is something that already in many ways fits into the new ordinance. So I respect that, you know, the 20 limit, the screening, you know, you obviously have some details to figure out about the engineering and so on. I think the location is valid and well picked. And so those are my comments on it, just if you wanted some feedbacks.
Thank you, Matt. Does anyone else from the Planning Commission have any comments?
Yes, I do. This is Cookie again. I really think that this falls in very well with the general plan. We're trying to keep Boulder's ag healthy and as much of it as we can, and back up ranchers and in their efforts to keep things together, which is really hard. And I really appreciate this concept. And I'm with Matt. I think it's a great beginning, and I'm really curious about seeing how this develops. Thank you, Ray.
Thank you.
Does anybody else on the Planning Commission have a comment? I like the plan too, Ray, and I hope you follow through with it and things work out for you, and we'll see what comes up next. Thank you.
So can I just ask you, as a Planning Commission, I mean, is anything jumping out at you that is a concern that maybe I need to rethink? You know, it's between, and I've read up on the state statute, the RV statute, between that and the septic limitations, you know, you might think, well, it's just an RV park, but it really is kind of threading the needle in terms of getting everything right to meet all those codes. And so I'm just wondering, does it appear from what you're seeing here that there's a way forward for me, or is there something that I really need to focus on and rethink and perhaps redesign?
I think both Matt and I think we all feel like it's something that you should go forward on, and that you are definitely hitting what's in both of these ordinances that we're looking at. Does anyone have any comments?
I have one more comment, and I don't know the details, and I don't know if you've looked into it, Ray, but of course, one of the major issues is the ingress and egress off Highway 12 and distances and all that, but I guess that can be figured out with the DOT, so that's something that needs to be addressed.
Yes, Matt, I've had a conversation, several conversations with them, and they have given me permission via email. It's not an official letter, but they have given me permission via email to come off of Highway 12 at that location for a commercial venture. And so I think I can move forward on that. Now, I think there will need to be a fair amount of work between the highway and where the fence is, where you can just see up the edge of that photo in terms of building up the bar pits. And my concern, because I'm a safety-minded person, your view to the north up the highway, there would need to be, there's some young cottonwood trees growing up right underneath the power line, the other power line that goes through there. They would need to be trimmed back to give motorists a unobstructed view to the north if they were trying to make a left-hand turn onto the highway. What DOT told me essentially is that more hookups would probably require them to do a traffic study, which could result in possibly a turning lane, which would be on the developer, that's me, to finance. And so I would really like to stay under that limit.
Gotcha, great, thank you.
Okay. Great, thank you so much. Okay, so we have Elena Hughes on the agenda She has some questions on subdivision requirements.
Michelle, are you able to pull up one or both of these maps? Or
yes.
Start with that one.
Yeah, that's fine. Let me figure out how to zoom in here.
How's that?
That's good.
Okay. Hi everyone. I'm Elena Hughes here with Dylan Geerlings. We're two young moguls who are trying to put down roots here. We're going to read a written statement explaining what we're trying to do, and then we'll be happy to answer any questions you all have. We are interested in splitting this lot so that we can each have 5 affordable acres. I operate a small-scale regenerative agriculture business called Five Forks Farm that I hope to grow in the coming years. We plan to create a shared pasture on about 8 of the 10 acres, preserving the open space on this property. Owning property would make my land-based project much more feasible. This lot presents the unique opportunity to farm not only the land we would own, but also neighboring land, the owners of whom have expressed interest in such an arrangement. I would like to read a few points from the general plan that we feel are directly in line with our goals on the land and in the community. According to the general plan, the primary objectives of the community are 1, to preserve Boulder's small-scale agricultural lifestyle, 2, to protect the open space that currently exists, and 3, to promote self-reliance and resiliency. The secondary objectives are to support an economically viable future by encouraging a local land-based economy centered on food security, cottage industry, local entrepreneurship, full-time residency, and affordable opportunities for future generations. These are the exact goals of my business and our interest in the land. Elena and I are under contract with the owners to purchase this lot, and our due diligence period ends on August 1st. We are coming to you this evening for some guidance on an issue that we were just made aware of, about an existing driveway that you can see in the images. The image in front of you, it's down at the bottom of that lot under the green dot there. And we were just made aware of the issue with this existing driveway. It currently runs along the base of our parcel, splitting into 2 driveways. Our understanding was that we just needed to be at 10 acres in order to split the lot into 2 5-acre parcels. So we've been working for months with the neighbors on boundary adjustments to get the parcel from 9.79 to 10 acres. We are very fortunate to have their support and cooperation on this. We have a survey lined up in August that would make those boundary adjustments official, bringing the parcel up to 10 acres. Just the other day, it was brought to our attention that the existing dirt driveway that I showed you before and serves our neighbors, runs for about 400 feet through our parcel, may need to be excluded from our total acreage, making it impossible, even with the boundary adjustments, to get to the necessary 10 acres to split. This is a unique situation to this parcel because the existing driveway is a simple right-of-way to the junction of 2 driveways, and it is pre-existing and has nothing to do with our project. We are not proposing a subdivision and a road accessing one or more lots or really developing much of anything. The road requirement is there for new access roads needed by developers. We are asking that the PC use the discretion clearly stated in section 152.041H5 as being in your power to use on subdivisions with 4 or fewer lots where the road section would pose an undue hardship. The existing driveway has nothing to do with our project, but is putting a hardship on us, and we are asking that we not be penalized for it. We thought that we were in good shape once we got to the 10 acres. We are hoping, so we are coming to you earlier than we had planned and with more outstanding details than we had hoped, because we either have to buy or forfeit the land on August 1st, and this issue is the hurdle standing in the way of that decision. We understand you cannot give us any kind of final approval today, but we are hoping you could provide us some guidance to indicate if this project is worth moving forward on. And as Elena said, we are happy to answer any questions you may have.
Did everybody hear that all right?
Yes.
Okay, does anyone have any comments?
I do. I have a questions and some comments. So the land you're working on acquiring to the south, from that image, I it looks like those structures are right along the orange line. And I'm wondering about setbacks. If you're changing that boundary, are you going to be meeting the, will that lot be meeting setbacks?
Yes, and those green dots are just total approximations of where we plan to build, and that's all adjustable.
Okay. But we don't think we'll have any issue with setbacks. The blue line is supposed to, we don't know yet how we would plan to divide.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm talking about the lot below to the south. You're looking to acquire that little 0.7.
No, boundary adjustments would be to the east.
Yeah.
Oh, boundary to the east. Gotcha. Okay, very good. That answers that question. Okay, and then I want to, I appreciate your quotes from the general plan. And, you know, I agree that your vision here does meet those, but we're required to follow the code, which is the ordinances, to approve any CUP. So I want to speak to your quote from the subdivision ordinance and your question about undue hardship. Mm-hmm. So can I share my screen, Peg? Can you make that? It looks like I can do that, but I'm not sure if I'll be allowed. Let me try.
You should be able to.
Okay, and then hold on just a sec. I lost my Zoom. Did it share? Let me try one more time. Oh, there we go. Okay. And I have several screens, so I have to pick the right one. Sorry, bear with me.
I know what you're feeling.
You know what? I'm going to just go ahead with my PDFs here because that's going to be the easiest screen to share. So you should see the subdivision ordinance. Okay, so you were reading under Section 8, Subdivision Roads and Streets, and we've got A and B below that, and this is where the minimum lot size as required by the town zoning ordinance shall be exclusive of road easements and rights of way.
Right.
And then you pointed out in your statement that underneath this table, standards for all proposed streets, it does state that the Planning Commission have some latitude in applying this section to subdivisions proposing the creation of four or less lots, wherein the sole discretion in this section would create an undue hardship for the applicant. So the way this has always been enforced is the undue hardship is the financial cost of using these design standards, these construction standards for proposed streets. So for example, and I'm gonna use myself as an example, I had originally proposed clustering my home site back with my family's homes, which would put me outside of our irrigated pasture lands, which I was trying to protect. But given the distance, I would have needed to, construct a road, a graded road, and take a fire hydrant back to that site, which was going to cost about $70,000. So that's a financial undue hardship. When I proposed it to the Planning Commission, I was told by the chair at the time, was Perry, was that it's really difficult to make that distinction between, you know, an individual such as myself wanting to build on family land and the cost of having to take this infrastructure in, or how do you make that call if a developer wants to say undue hardship that, you know, they didn't want to make that kind of cost. And my answer was, well, you look at, I wasn't proposing to sell anything and make any type of profit off of it, but it was still denied at that time, which I ended up having to build up in the pasture. But when I think about somebody who's looking to buy a lot and the lot is under 10 acres, for me, that doesn't fit into the definition of an undue hardship. It just means maybe that lot's not gonna fit. But regardless of that, this isn't the only place that lot size is defined. And it's actually in the zoning ordinance. Let me just do the quick switch again, which makes it very clear that, and this is in the, let me get out of there, close that. Try again, sorry, too many buttons. Here we go. So we're looking at this table, which is the required development standards for all zoning districts. And when we go into GMU, it's very clear that the minimum lot size is exclusive of road easements. And so for me, that really would make me say that this isn't going to work because you're looking at two road easements. Actually, you have the one that's going to Matt and the one that's going to Matt and Constance and the other to Elizabeth. Plus, now I'm going to quit sharing. When we stop and look at your map again, you're going to have another easement from the south lot to the north lot. That road would also have to be an easement. So you'll even have a greater acreage taken out of there, because you're going to have to be able to get from the bottom to the top. So you're going to have two easements there. So that is, you know, how I'm looking at it. And so for me, I'm not seeing how this is going to work. So I'm, you know, I do appreciate your vision and your goal here, but I'm, you know, I'm sorry to say that, yeah, that would be a no for me.
I think that what we're trying to get at is that that road is really in practice a driveway and not a road. It's a joint shared access driveway that, you know, splits off to be a dirt driveway to Matt and Constance and then a dirt driveway to Troy and Elizabeth. And so we're just asking that that not be taken out of our acreage given the larger picture. But so I'm kind of confused exactly what you're...
So it's not a public road, but it is a right-of-way. It's a right-of-way easement. And right-of-ways and easements cannot be included in the 5 acres. And you're right that it's a driveway. It's not a town road, but that's not what the definition says. The definition says right-of-way and easements.
Right, and we're asking that that you guys use your discretion as it says that you have to offer us a little bit of leeway there, considering that it really is a common use driveway and it isn't a road, and it's not us developing that road. It's not us putting it in a road for further development. It's an existing driveway that goes across our land in order for our neighbors to have access to their parcels. Obviously, we can't landlock anyone. So we're just asking not to be penalized for an existing driveway. And that's just kind of our ask.
Yeah, I understand what you're asking, but again, it's very clear in our, not the subdivision, that says that we have some, you know, leniency, but that's really to construction standards. It's in our zoning ordinance that right-of-ways and easements cannot be a part of the 5 acres. And so what that would do, that would mean that we would be setting precedent about not following our zoning ordinance.
I think that we do think that this would be not a huge risk for much precedent, because at least in our understanding of the rationale behind not including roads in the acreage was that it's, you know, it's more designed for large scale development and people who are putting in multiple lots and are going to need quite a bit more road infrastructure there. We're not putting in any kind of road, and that's not our intent at all. And so that's kind of where we fall on that. And we try to see it more as a driveway than a road, which in practice is what it is.
Okay, well, and so as far as what the intent was right around the same time that this Goldman subdivision was made. And there are 3 lots in the Goldman subdivision. And the intent was specifically for this type of development. That wasn't for large scale coming in to do, you know, huge 20 lot type subdivisions. It was on scale for Boulder.
So I'd like to make a comment. It would be nice to, I know my question is, where is, you know, how do we really define what are seemingly somewhat contradictions in the law here, and who's the final arbiter of that? I know the zoning administrators put it over to the PC, but we personally, you know, following, you know, Elena and Dylan's line of thought, it really is something that I would like to promote as falling perfectly into what the general plan intends. And, you know, being obviously involved, it's something that I would like to encourage. So how can we define if there really is leeway where we have some discretion as the PC? Because even though I hear what you're saying, Josie, I'm not convinced, because there's always, you know, it's always a matter of interpretation, actually, when it comes to the law. So how do we get a final sort of arbiter on this? Those are my comments. Yeah.
Could I make a comment, speaking as the secretary of the Board of Adjustment? Is this something that would be appropriate even appropriate to go before the Board of Adjustment seeking a variance?
Yeah, and I was going to suggest the same, Peg, that this would be a variance from the zoning ordinance.
Does anyone else have any comments? So
this is Cookie. I have a comment. I really hope that this somehow can get worked out. I am a little bit, I don't know whether I heard this or read this in your statement, but was there some option of buying a little more land to make this, and also, is there a way that you could extend this August 1st deadline so we just have more time to think about it and work on it and maybe get with the Board of Adjustments?
We tried to have a longer due diligence period with the buyer, with the sellers. They said that in this market, they could not justify taking it off market for the whole summer. So we really tried to give ourselves more time, knowing that everything around here takes more time and we were going to need answers. But this is as far as they would give us, so we can go back, but they were pretty stern on that. And then what was your other question, Cookie? I think I missed it.
Did you say, right?
Yeah.
So is anybody willing around you?
I can't speak for anyone's personally, the two landowners who have made arrangements with us or agreed in principle to give us or sell to us, exchange with us some of their land. It's important for them to be able to stay at 10 acres as well. And so that they are able to shave off everything that they have over 10 acres, but in order to give us what would cover the road, they would have to go under 10. So we need to approach other landowners around, and there's only one or two others that are over 10. So we can try that. It is going to be a longer road, and we really don't know if we'd be able to accomplish that in time to make the purchase. We thought that we were in good shape getting to 10 acres, and that took us quite a while. So that was kind of where we left it.
Thank you.
Does anyone else have any comments?
Okay. Colleen, is this PC and you two, or is this open for any public questions?
We have public comments at the end, and I'd rather keep it at that. Does anyone else have, no one else has any comments? I would suggest that you might go to the person that's south of you and ask, because they have a little bit more property than the two that you have asked.
I'm directionally challenged.
So you're looking at where the indention is?
Yeah, right.
So you're looking at that indention right there, and that would be a huge, and those might be people that you want to talk to.
The indention, that little lot is just a 0.7 acre lot,
yeah,
which I don't know when that was allowed to happen, but that happened, so I wonder. But that they wouldn't be able to shave off any more of that.
Yeah. That's a lot?
Yes, yeah. That little thing is a lot.
Just that right now. That's only
a lot. And we did the math, and in order to get enough to bring it up, that line would have to go right up, you know, like 2 feet from the actual house. So that's probably not realistic for them.
Yeah.
Who's the contact on the Board of Adjustments? So they have a contact if they want to go that route.
That would be me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Tina Carlson is the chair, and I would be contacting Tina to set up a meeting. They're fairly flexible. I mean, they've set a schedule for the regular meetings, but because they meet so infrequently, they will probably meet as needed. So
I think they would too. Yeah. Does anyone else have any comments?
I just, yeah, I encourage you to go the variance route, because that, you know, that is the legal way to go forward. But when you do that, make sure that you're also including that access to your lot on the north, because that's going to be a right of way. You have to have access to all lots, right? So you have to have an easement to get up there.
But there's, so you're suggesting dividing it on that way. So you have two different ways.
Yeah, so if you follow the blue line, that's right. One way to divide it. You wouldn't need an easement. You would both be able to access straight from that lower boulder extension that's right there. So right. That's why we have it divided that way.
And you have it divided the other way.
Yeah, we have the white line there just as, ideally we would love to be able to do it that way. It would be a little bit simpler in terms of having septics on each other's land and stuff like that. But the blue line would allow us to not have to do any kind of easement for each other. And we could both do our private driveway that does not come out of the
line. Because we ran into the road issue. The white line would be ideal. The blue line eliminates the road issue on each other's driveway. And driveways, in our understanding, don't take from the acreage.
With the diagonal design that you have, we're going to have to consider that width versus length language.
We worked out the math with the 1/3 and it fits in.
Okay.
So we can show you guys that math, but that does fit.
And then just one other option that I see from the picture is perhaps you could get an easement on that existing driveway that would get you really close to your lot if you went with the white line. If that makes sense, that, you know, the driveway to the east of your property, that would give you access if you could get an easement. And given that you do have support of the neighbors, that may be worth pursuing.
Yeah.
And then you could have that normal shaped lot, because I understand that would be more desirable too.
Do either one of you have any questions? Any other questions?
I guess I wonder about, and this isn't a fully formed thought yet, but I guess I wonder about the assumption that exists in town that if you have 10 acres, you can split into five. So if suddenly all roads or easements or right-of-ways don't count into that, what does that mean for, in general, I guess? I feel like that's such a commonly...
So what it is there isn't an assumption. There might be an assumption on some people's parts, but I think it states that you have to, and it comes down to it, if you have 10 acres and you're going to split it, there's a good chance you're not going to be able to do it. You have to have over 10 acres to subdivide, to have that extra. And I think it is written somewhere.
It is. It's in your zoning. But if you had a lot that was positioned along a road frontage, right, if it was all along lower Boulder Road and not off, then you would have access to both lots, and then 10 acres would suffice. But when you're starting to go off the main road like that, that's where, you know, that you'd need more than 10 acres to subdivide. And that's always just, that's been known. I mean, you know, this is something that, well, I guess I couldn't speak for the entire town, but it's pretty general knowledge for anyone that has been looking at subdividing land.
Josie, and I have a question. What's the actual reasoning for removing the acreage of a right-of-way from a property fully?
I think it came from that discussion of a 5-acre minimum. And then when you're like, well, what about when you start having to take out roads and easements, then you don't have a 5-acre minimum. And you know, that's why it got written in the way it did.
So does anyone have any other comments?
I have one more question for these guys. Is there a way that undue hardship is defined?
That's a good question. And that's why it's been also discussed that it's probably due time that comes out. And along those lines, you know, with land being able to be sold for what it is now, I think, you know, in the last couple of months, we've had land sell for up to $50,000 an acre. When you're making that kind of profit, where does that undue hardship? And how do you define it? And that's why it was denied to me, because it couldn't be defined. And we've been a little bit more flexible in this past year or so, but at one point, is it even going to apply in a town with this type of growth and, you know, where this town's evolved to? So that's a good question.
Yeah, I guess I'd be interested in exploring
why this wouldn't be an undue hardship. It seems to me like this last piece is in there. This piece saying that the planning commission has discretion to sort of do this differently for lots of four or less. It feels like that's in there because there's a recognition that lots of, or subdivisions of four or less lots are different than, you know, like I don't feel that splitting something into two needs to be treated like a 30 lot development. So, and it seems like the planning commission agreed and that's why that's in here. Or I don't think it would even be brought up. So I guess to me, this feels exactly like an undue hardship. So I'd be interested in hearing what other people on the planning commission feel about that.
Okay.
It's interesting that when the Board of Adjustment considers a variance, they have to, the applicant has to meet five criteria. And in that context, undue hardship cannot be a financial hardship. So I think the more I'm thinking about this, going with the variance, you know, applying for variance is the way to go, because a variance is very specifically tied to a specific lot and hardships associated with a particular lot that do not allow it to accommodate normal zoning requirements. So.
Well, thank you,
Craig. Yeah, and I just want to be clear, you know, I think that anybody could present that argument on the subdivision language, the ordinance and the language, but that language is not in the zoning ordinance. And that's where, you know, we have to follow both. And this is where the zoning ordinance is very clear that that's a 5 acres, not including the road easements. You know, we're really, our hands are tied.
And I guess there's a little bit of a question, at least on my end, as to, it's relatively ambiguous, the definition between driveway, road, street, easement, right of way. It's tough to really understand kind of which is which and which falls where. And so just a little bit more clarification on that. I know that it tries to go through and define street, but then it doesn't define road. And so it's a little bit unclear to people who are trying to understand.
So an easement's going to be recorded on your plat and there'll be a definite width to it. And that's the difference. Your right way and easements have to be recorded. And, you know, if we had to figure out exact acreage, we would take it off of that map.
So the plat map that we have, which is old, and I don't, to my knowledge, there isn't a more updated plat. The road that currently, the driveway that currently exists doesn't follow that. You can kind of see the indentation of where the original road that was platted is, but it is no longer in existence, which is why we felt like there's some wiggle room in terms of the fact that it's not the platted road that was on the original plat. It has become a common use driveway just over time.
Yeah, I can't answer that. I mean, it's a good point that the easement isn't following the easement, but I think that's out of our hands.
So I would say the same thing. My comment basically is I really think that you should try to get an appointment right away with the Board of Adjustments and let them hear this, because you do have support in the community.
And so far, for you guys as a planning commission, if the Board of Adjustments, I don't know how it works, but if the Board of Adjustments was to sign off on it, is that something that you guys would take with, that you guys would take and accept, or would we, we're just trying to get a little bit of
idea here. So the Board of Adjustments, Peg, can you answer that?
Yeah, if they approved a variance, that it's a variance, so that's variance. What it means.
That's all we need, yeah. Because, yeah, that's, yep, yeah, that's all we would need.
I just want to speak up really quick, and Dylan and Alina, tell you guys, I this is all really new information to me, but I'm hearing all of this, and I'm listening, and I fully support both of you, and I really hope it works out for you guys. And I hope that, you know, I don't know. I hope we can... That something works out. I just want you guys to know that I'm listening, and even though I'm not saying much.
Thanks, Haley. Okay. All right, so we're going to go ahead and move on. This is when we'll go ahead and have our final public comments. Did you want to make a comment? Please state your name and.
My name is John Kelly. And
John.
I'm going to butter to the.
Will you come closer just so. Because we record the meeting and this way everyone on Zoom can hear you too. Thank you.
I'm going to butter to the property that's under discussion. And I guess I have a question for people that are on the planning commission that are going to hear a lot longer than me. When the Golden subdivision was created, the things that are indicated and being referred to as driveways in the subdivision, were they registered with the county as roads, or did they just magically appear as driveways? You can't create a subdivision without having access to all the lots in the subdivision. And usually those access points in a subdivision are granted by the county. They're either accessed by road or lane or something. So since this was an official subdivision under the Goldman name, I'm curious what access was granted to both Matt and Elizabeth's properties.
I have the original vellum in my hands, and there is a the easement is all the way through there, and it shows you it's that it's going to be hard to explain, but it shows it exactly how you can see on the screen right now. And that oxbow that goes all the way up to the north lot is part of that original easement. And then, I mean, yeah, without being able to show you, but the original vellum does have it, sir.
So if it's a subdivision, who was the easement granted by and who was it granted to? I mean, Goldman owned the whole thing at the time. Did Goldman grant himself an easement to each of the lots in the subdivision?
I'm looking for the language. I don't see that language on this vellum that I have. So we would have to actually look at the record.
Okay, it's just a curiosity.
And does anyone else have any final, thank you. Does anyone else have any final public comments? Okay, so we need to set an agenda. Oh, sorry, I should look up. No more comments?
Hold on, let me stop the share so I can do the other things. I don't have any raised hands.
I did find the language while you were looking. It's a 40-foot private right-of-way is the language, not an easement.
So we don't, so does that, I don't, yeah, what does that mean? I don't know enough to know whether or not that changes anything, but does anyone know if it being a right-of-way rather than an easement relieves that pressure regarding the acreage?
Well, what would we refer to the zoning for this? I mean, what is the language? Does it say anything about right-of-ways?
It does.
Does it?
It says minimum lot sizes as required by the town zoning ordinance shall be exclusive of road easements and right-of-ways.
Okay. All right. So we're still in the same boat.
Yeah. Same boat.
Okay.
So you are very, you're really smart to make an appointment.
Yeah. Pink pegs on it.
Yeah. Okay. So we need to figure out what we're going to do for next month's meeting. Let's see. We'll have Lee and Ellis back. Is that right? Hello?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah. So for the agenda for next month, we have Lee and Ellis, right?
Yes.
He'll be continuing on with his information. And then we've just taken the campground and guest ranch off. Maybe Ray will be back with a little bit. I mean, we don't have much.
No, you have quite a bit.
Okay.
The thing that you didn't get around to today that was part of the previous Lynn Ellis discussion was this community meeting to discuss housing and capacity and development, so on and so forth. And you were going to come back and discuss how you were going to accommodate this community meeting. So that was supposed to be today, actually.
Matt, did you have comments on that?
I don't have many comments. I started researching mediators. That was sort of the role I assigned myself. And I haven't gotten very far with that. I actually think I need to talk. It seems really important to find the right kind of community mediator for that. So I'm going to do some offline talking with Lee about that. But it would be good to bump that to August and make time for a full discussion on that. And that will give me more time to bring you guys some more information.
And have you talked to David at all? The guy that does a lot of that development for low-income housing?
Who?
The guy that lives across the street from Hills and Hollows.
Dave Conine.
I haven't talked to him, but I will do my homework and get it to you guys in August.
Okay. And what else was there? Could you please refresh my memory of what we're going to talk about next month for the agenda?
It's possible that you could have a Deer Ranch preliminary application continuation public hearing. That's possible. Dave didn't indicate necessarily that would be a fact.
Yeah, I'd like to not schedule anything like that until we know we have all those documents and that it's ready. I don't want to schedule any kind of public hearing right now for them until they have their documents in place.
If they do happen to come into play, then I will put it on the agenda.
Okay.
If they have the 10-day, submittal, yes.
Well, I went through this with you. You and I talked about this a little bit as far as the subdivision. Was that, Ray submitted his application and it was 28 pages just for that subdivision. And I'm kind of hoping that we get to see that's what they're going to be prepared to give us when we do have a public hearing for that.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, that sounds good.
I mean, I don't know about 28 pages per se, but all of the elements that are included in the application need to be there. So that's right. What it took Ray. Yeah.
Right. And that's what you
do. I'm not aware of that.
Huh?
Yeah. Can I say one more thing? Or are we past that?
Well, we're kind of past
that. Okay, that's fine.
Maybe is there a public comment?
Yeah.
Sure.
Great.
So Lee is going to come back with hopefully some of those amendments, not the subdivision amendments that came out of the legislature, but the write-up of the amendments that you talked about today.
Right.
What would be required to change in like the zoning ordinance from legislative changes. So that's all I know of specifically right now. That's all I know of right now. To my knowledge, let's just be happy and assume that Elena and Dylan will be able to work out their deal with Board of Adjustment. There's no requirement for them to come. They're not going to officially try to subdivide right now, are they? That's a question mark.
No.
Okay.
Well, they can't even figure that out until they get a variance.
Well, right? I mean, they have to own the property too, so there's that.
Right. We're just trying to figure out if it's likely.
Yeah. And I guess along those same lines, the Board of Adjustment couldn't give you a variance on property you don't own. So you'd be going before them to again see what the likelihood of your getting that would be, right?
Right. And so our understanding from you guys as a planning commission is that you want that to be completely up to the
Yes.
I didn't
have
hear
a question.
So the question was from Dylan was, is this all based on our their answer that they will receive from the Board of Adjustments.
Yeah, I just want to say, I think for Dylan and Elena, as Josie pointed out, and by law, the PC's hands are tied, even though you have all the community support, as far as I can tell. And so it seems like the clearest line to addressing the, you know, legal issue that's there is going straight to the Board of Adjustments. And if that's granted, then problem solved.
Matt, this is Elena. Would you mind explaining to me? I think something is not clear to us. It feels really, I don't know, when you say your hands are tied, it feels, the language feels super clear to us that, I don't know, the undue hardship thing, I think we're still getting hung up on. Do you have any color on that? It doesn't, the way I think it doesn't feel to me like your hands are tied.
Well, there, we, you know, when it comes to decisions like that, we have to make legislative decisions. And as Josie was pointing out, you know, unfortunately in the ordinance, it's pretty clear that the right-of-ways and the easements are a standard, and I didn't know this, but are a standard, not included in the thing. She pointed out that language, I suppose. I mean, you guys have been to the zoning administrator and so on. And so my only other call on that was, how do we sometimes discern what seemed to be, and I don't know if they are, but they seem to be contradictory legal things within the ordinances. And I don't know if that's the case, but at this point, you know, it does seem your quicker line of solving the problem is actually going to the Board of Adjustments, in my mind.
Thanks, Matt.
One last thing. We have one more hand raised. Sadie, do you want to go ahead?
There we go. Can you, I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, so I'm Sadie. And I'm just, this is my first meeting to watch. So I'm sure that I'm missing many, many things, but I guess just as one of the very few other young people who are trying to make their own go with a business here on their own, I'm just wondering, I guess, if based on how it's being seen, if it's so much, I guess, why is it so much easier to be able to quickly do 25 or 20, whatever the number was, of like RV slots in a 3-acre part, which I totally am for. But I guess I'm wondering why that's so much easier than having a 9.9 acre split up. for two people who are trying to live here and actually contribute to the community and not be a tourist. And again, I'm very aware that I'm missing many things and I'm skimming over, but I'm just, it just kind of seems like we have the power to change stuff to make it better for our community. And I guess I'm wondering why we haven't, or if we're going to.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So can we get back to the agenda? So Peg, do we have an agenda?
I guess we do. What you?
Okay, yeah. I just want to make sure that we at least have an agenda to start with, because that's one of the things that we're supposed to do before we end the meeting.
Yes, the Lee Nellis continuation of all the stuff he's going to talk about, bringing up whatever Matt and anybody else who's looking into the community meeting on capacity, development capacity. I don't know if Ray would possibly be ready to submit a conditional use application by next time, but that's a possibility. Deer Ranch is a possibility. Those are the things that I know of as possibilities.
Okay. So I make a motion that we close the meeting.
What about public comments? Did we have those already?
Yeah.
At the end?
Yep.
All right. Well, I just need to make one quick comment. And Matt, this is for you. I checked on with Bryce Canyon, and because Bryce Canyon is a national park, the state paid for the survey on the water. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't give you any information as far as them going to someone, because the state did pay for it. So hope that helps.
Thank you, Judy. So I made a motion to close the meeting.
I second that motion. This is Cookie.
All in favor?
Matt Cochran, aye.
Jason Apperson, aye.
Cookie Shouse, aye.
Pauline Thompson, aye.